The closing market report is made possible in part by Justin Wood, Paul Stevens, Tim Smith, Scott Harms, and Mark Soderberg of Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm. You can learn more about the services they offer at 800-637-3123.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for August 26, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, Russian officials say the U.S. is ready to resupply its market with meat that complies with a ban on ractopamine. And we'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason will look at a new University of Illinois study which shows share rent leases outperforming traditional cash rent. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red September wheat, 7.08 and a quarter, up 12 and three quarters. December, 7.13 and a quarter, up 16. Soft September, 6.54 and three quarters, up 20 and a quarter. December, 6.66 and three quarters, up 20 and three quarters. September corn, 5.15 and three quarters, up 20 and a quarter. December, $5.50, up 30 and a half. March, 5.12 and a half, up 30 and a quarter. July, 5.25, up 29 and a quarter. September soybeans, 14.27 and three quarters, up 62 and a half. At one point, it was locked limit up. November, 13.89 and a half, up 61 and a half. January, 13.87, up 58 and a half. July of 14, 13.14 and a half, up 39 and three quarters. September soybean meal, 4.58.60, up 25.40. September soybean oil, 44.44, up 180. August live cattle, 123.30, up 20. August feeder cattle, 154.40. They were down 60. And October lean hogs, 86.05. They're up 95. And those are today's settlements and last trades from Kansas City and from Chicago.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that minimal rainfall and warm temperatures will occur in the U.S. Midwest, Central and Southern Plains, Delta, and a part of these southeastern states during the coming week. Crop moisture stress is likely to be greatest in dry areas of Iowa, northern Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and in portions of the eastern Dakotas and Minnesota. However, rain is expected to occur periodically in eastern North Dakota and northern and central Minnesota to help reduce stress in those areas. Highest temperatures this week will be in the 80s and 90s across most of the U.S. Midwest, with the warmest readings in the central and west. Extreme highs in the 90s to slightly over 100 degrees will occur in the U.S. Great Plains this week, while extremes in the Delta and southeastern states will be in the 90s.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Joining us now from the Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday closing market report home is Todd Gleason out at the Farm Progress Show. Good afternoon,
hey Dave,
Todd.
How are you today?
Doing well. I understand you got everything all set up.
Well, if you can hear me, then everything is working properly.
You have quite the lineup, don't you?
Oh, we have a big lineup. Actually, many of the researchers and professors that you hear me talk to from the University of Illinois will be here. And not only that, we'll have many, many of the analysts, the regular on-air analysts, the special guests for Commodity Week, probably about 20 of them over the three-day period. They'll be here at 10:30 in the morning. I'll be putting them on stage with Orion Samuelson, by the way, the legendary broadcaster from WGN. He'll be up for about an hour, 10:30 to 11:30. Then we'll do the closing market report live, Dave, on 206 at this time, each day of Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I'm looking really forward to it.
So that is a supersized show.
Yeah, it should be a great show. It's fantastic. And if you come, you get to ask questions, too, and it's a great place to meet and talk to the analysts and the researchers and scientists because they're here only for one reason, and that's to discuss whatever you have on your mind.
Perfect. Where is the University of Illinois tent?
We are located at the corner of 3rd Street and West Avenue. So if you're coming in the main gate and you walk through the main gate, turn right and go three blocks and we're right there.
Oh, we can't wait to hear what they have to say. Thanks, Todd.
Yep, look for the University of Illinois tent.
That's Todd Gleason out at the Farm Progress Show. We'll be there live Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for the closing market report, as well as a 10:30 show in the morning with legendary broadcaster Orion Samuelson. Joining us now to talk about the markets is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Hot, hot, hot is the markets.
Boy, hot in more ways than one, but this is what commodity traders live for is some type of dynamic news like this to come across to be able to push the market, and it's well needed for producers as far as price direction, which is up. So unfortunately, though, it's going to be at the sacrifice of smaller bushels in some areas that's missed the rain here. But overall, you know, the funds were heavy buyers today. They came in and dominated the market starting last night through the close today. They were estimated to be buyers at midday, up to 16,000 contracts of beans, 8,000 contracts of oil, 6,000 meal, 21,000 corn, and about 9,000 wheat on the midday report there. So there's a lot of buying power in the marketplace, and I expect the market to remain firm here until we see some type of hint of some moisture coming into the drier regions.
One couldn't think that we would do this again tomorrow, but I suppose if we got the right set of factors, it's possible.
I don't know if it'd be this magnitude. We might get a little calmness. Turnaround Tuesday might kind of limit the buying spree here for a moment, but it's pretty serious. You know, if you look at the meal and oil market, especially oil, trade's concerned about oil content and being here with the dry weather coming across. But, you know, they pushed the market. A lot of commercials were not covered on buying needs. They're chasing the market. We're tripping buy programs to the upside. So it's just a combination, all-out buying coming in and pushing the market higher. And I expect, you know, the market's going to stay firm here for some time.
Do you think that the market is so dynamic that we will go back net long for the non-commercials in corn?
Well, the it's going to be a little tough show for the shorter-term big short position. It's just a huge short position. It's going to take some time to unwind that. And we're not approaching, you know, the long-term moving averages just yet. I mean, we're clipping the 40 and 50 and so forth. But, no, we've turned the momentum indicators up, and it's a type of market here where they bought beans, sold corn, bought beans, sold wheat. So a lot of that might be coming as some unwinding the spreads here once the bean market kind of cools down, per se.
So this is a hedger's dream, especially if you hadn't done much.
Correct. This is an opportunity to get caught up. You know, our number one recommendation from clear back over a year ago has been to put a price floor. And there's various ways you can do that and various ways to take advantage of the ups and downs and through here. And this is an excellent tool, especially if you're in a dry area. You don't know how many bushels you're going to have this fall. I know some producers have gotten aggressive and sold some, but now they're, you know, if they were 50% sold, they might be close to 100% sold, you know, if they missed the moisture here. And that's why we've used the so-called price floor in here to protect your downside but leave your marketing on the physical side wide open, not only in bushels but price and location.
Could these August lows be the harvest lows?
Very well. If we stay dry, you know, for the next week, 2 weeks, this is a market shocker in through here. This is, if you're short the market, you're going to have to make some margin calls. There's going to be some pain coming through here. As we've been talking about for the last 5 to 6 years, this market is a roaring type of market like the 70s. You know, straight up, straight down, straight up, straight down. And basically, you got to remember, the end user is empty. They've been taking some downtime in through here, and they're not covered. And so this market's going to find support on breaks in through here until they're a little bit more comfortable production prospects.
What has the speculator been doing? Have they been looking at September options, that kind of thing?
Well, it depends what your comfort zone is. If you're a trader, I'll give you a little hint of what we've been doing. On the beans, we've gone to the October bean options. Those are good until September 20th. You know, there's risk there that if the market does not go in your favor, you can lose your premium in a heartbeat. But it gives you the ability to get your foot in the door to capture some moves here over the next few weeks. Corn-wise, we've been kind of sticking to the December options there. Just give us a little bit more time there. So, you know, that's one way to get in, knowing exactly what your risk is. Then there's all kinds of strategies you can use to use the futures in a combination with an option, sort of a covered position. That's what a lot of your big fund managers do to give them staying power in the marketplace, is sort of be in there and have a covered position. That way you don't get chopped up in these huge up and down moves.
I suppose we ought to have a word on the livestock side before we let you go.
Well, I kind of disappointed on the cattle. I kind of felt that we'd see a little bit more up on the cattle and feed report there. You know, placements below trade expectations. There are some feeders to be placed out there as we move down the road. Just overall, U.S. consumption continues to struggle. Pretty well booked up for this coming Labor Day weekend holiday. Hopefully we'll see some good retail clearance here. It's just good old-fashioned demand domestically. It needs to pick up here to support the fat market up in this 128, 129 level.
We're seeing a lot of sales already in the newspapers about $2 chuck, so maybe you're right. Maybe there'll be some good disappearance.
Yeah, that's what we need in through here. You know, the summer struggled around 120. As we look on around this fall, early winter, they're looking 128. So they're optimistic price-wise. We just need the demand to kick in.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Take care, Dave.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Kurt joins us every Monday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In agricultural news, Russia says U.S. meat exporters are ready to supply the Russian market with meat that complies with Russia's ban on ractopamine. However, there has been no confirmation of the claim by U.S. government or meat industry officials. However, it should be noted that Smithfield Foods, the world's largest pork processor and producer, already has removed ractopamine from the animal feed in much of its pork production facilities. Environmental groups are stepping up pressure to further force Iowa's hand in improving water quality. The Iowa Environmental Council and the Environmental Law and Policy Center filed a petition with the Iowa Environmental Protection Commission calling for the adoption of numeric water quality standards for total phosphorus and nitrogen in public recreational lakes. The petition argues that Iowa's current narrative standards, which are less specific than numeric standards, were never meant to be permanent. China's government today tried to reassure companies and its public about the economy's health, saying growth is stabilizing after a lengthy decline and should hit the official target of 7.5% for the year. The announcement by the chief spokesman for the cabinet's statistics agency was part of official efforts to diffuse unease about the country's deepest slump since the 2008 global crisis. The International Monetary Fund and private sector analysts have cut this year's growth forecasts for China to a still healthy level of close to 8%. Still, the downturn has been deeper than forecast due to unexpectedly weak global demand for Chinese goods. Vietnam has purchased 3 cargoes of U.S. soy meal, totaling around 120,000 metric tons for shipment in October, November, and December from Omaha-based Farmers Cooperative Ag Processing Incorporated. The deal indicates that Vietnam, a traditional buyer of Indian and South American soy meal, is turning to the U.S. to meet increased demand. Vietnam's demand for animal feed is forecast to increase by 5% to a record 13.5 million tons this year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. A new University of Illinois study shows share rent leases for farmland have outperformed cash rent leases over the last half decade. Todd Gleason has more.
Landlords have been progressively turning to cash rent agreements to lease their farmland. It's mostly about ease of use and the perception that returns are higher on cash rented properties, says University of Illinois Extension Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnittke. So he looked at the rental agreements and the returns. Turns out, the perceptions are wrong.
Well, we saw from 2006 through 2012, actually, share rent returns were for landlords were higher than the average cash rents. And they were considerably higher, and on average about $60 per year. So over the 2006 through 2012 time period, share rent did as well as the average cash rent. We also compared it to cash rents charged by professional farm managers, and the two were about even over that time period. So share rent landlords did about as the same as an average cash rent for professionally managed land, although in some of those professionally managed lands there's considerably higher rents than the average. But overall, you would say that share rents over that time period has done reasonably well, at least compared to measures of cash rent returns.
The time frame listed in the study does make a difference as it pertains to share rent agreements. The 6-year period is one of rising prosperity on the farm. The very nature of cash rental agreements puts them at a disadvantage during such times.
It does make a difference because during that period, you know, we had returns going up, and share rents will automatically adjust to that because they are sharing gross returns and the cost. And typically cash rents lag what's happening to returns.
Well, this lag timing, the adjustment of cash rent pricing, causes the opposite effect during eras of declining farm incomes, meaning cash rents return more profits to the landlord, generally speaking, when farm incomes are declining year over year. Still, that's not the whole story.
So from 2000 to 2005, and again, this paper didn't do it, they were about even. Actually, cash rents were slightly higher, $5 to $10 higher during that time period. So, and again, that was a pretty static time period, and now we're in a growing time period.
If you'd like to see Schnittke's work on farmland rental agreements, visit the Farm Doc Daily website. The address is www.farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Before we get to what you do best, just I'd like a comment from you about the future side? What are your thoughts on what's happening?
Well, I think the soybean market is the leader. The rain, lack of rain over the last 3 weeks has really lowered traders' ideas of where the bean yield will eventually end up. And with very little rain in the forecast this week or next week, you know, traders are just trying to figure out how low the bean yield can actually go. And so until they put some rain in the forecast, it sure feels like the futures market wants to work higher in soybeans.
And in the areas that you served, are there any soybeans out there, old crop?
Very few, very, very few. You know, that's why we're paying $1.40, $1.50 more for old crop beans than we are for new crop beans, because there's just so few left, and harvest is still, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks away. So, you know, if there are any old crop beans out there, the market is trying to encourage them to move sooner rather than later.
What do you think about the ratio between November soybeans and December corn? I think it was over, 286 or thereabouts at one point today?
Yeah, and it can go wider, because that ratio will affect planting decisions for next year. But as far as this year is concerned, it is what it is. So, you know, for the 2014 crop, that ratio comes into play. But for the 2013 crop, basically the acres have been planted here. So, you know, if we really have less beans and not as small a corn crop, the ratio could go to 3 or even wider. Now, at some point, that will influence the South American acreage's decisions. But for U.S. acreage decisions, the die has been cast, and now we're just waiting to see what the yields are on those acres that we did plant.
So did producers start ringing your phone today then?
We were busy today, but some thought they might have too much sold, so there was a little bit of people buying back some of their previous sales. We'd also have new DP charges that start. Most elevators have new DP charges start September 1. So some guys are cleaning up their old crop corn and beans that are in DP this week prior to new charges getting started. So it was busy, but I would not say we were, you know, buying a lot of, you know, a lot of, we were answering more questions than we were buying grain.
Well, $5.50 on the board, that's a number that no one thought we would see 2 weeks ago.
That's right. That's right. And the corn may get there. But it's definitely a follower. The beans would have to go quite high to get that. But we were just looking a year ago today on this date, November beans were $17.31. So even with this big rally, November beans today are $13.89. That's still over $3 less than where we were at this time a year ago. And corn was $8, $8.08 on December 12 futures a year ago today. So quite a bit off of the highs from where we were last year at this time.
But if you can make a case for ending stocks of around 110 million bushels in soybeans for new crop, it won't take much longer to get over $15.
Exactly. We have to find the price where we can start rationing demand. I mean, right now China is still buying beans. And, you know, so obviously $13 didn't slow them down. $14 doesn't seem to be slowing them down. So we'll just keep ratcheting up the price until we find that price level where the demand slows down.
Why don't we go ahead and get your prices today then?
All right. Cash corn is $6.40. New corn is $4.90. Cash beans are $14.94. New beans $13.77. And wheat is $6.35.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. In about 2 minutes, I'll be back to look at agricultural weather with the folks from Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago. It's National Cherry Popsicle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1784, Stephen McCormick was born. An American inventor, he was the first to produce a practical cast iron plow with detachable parts. His cast iron board also had an adjustable wrought iron point mounted beneath, able to decrease the draft while deepening the furrow. Before that, he increased the productivity of a water-powered grist mill by improving the shape of the lower millstone. In 1800, Félix Pouchet was born. A French naturalist, he was one of those who believed that life was created from non-living matter in processes such as fermentation and purification. He was, of course, eventually proved wrong. In 1856, William Henry Perkin received a patent for dyeing silk, cotton wool, or other materials with a purple or lilac synthetic dye, the first synthetic dye ever produced. In 1900, Hedley Marson was born. An Australian biochemist, he spent three decades with his colleagues researching the role of cobalt and other trace elements in animal and plant nutrition. He discovered that ailing sheep often recovered when given cobalt salt supplements. And in 1950, Ranson Oldstein, an American inventor, his progressive assembly line in automotive production foreshadowed modern mass production methods. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at agricultural weather is Mark Russo from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon, Dave.
So when is it going to rain again? I'll be very blunt about this.
Well, not much here as far as the Corn Belt that we see on the horizon coming up, at least as we go through this week. There's going to be some thunderstorm activity across the northern sections of the Corn Belt, really up in Wisconsin and up into Michigan, central Minnesota. But here across Illinois and into areas of Indiana, continuation of dry weather as we go through this week. It's the next opportunity for some rain would be coming up over the upcoming weekend. More so it looks like in Indiana, Ohio versus Illinois, but that would be the next opportunity here. And again, at this time, it just simply does not look good.
So it would be rain coming up from the south then?
Actually, no. It'll be developing from the north-northwest as these thunderstorms firing up on the northern periphery of this strong ridge of high pressure, which is right now and will be over the next 5 days locked up over Missouri.
What will you be looking at to see whether or not this dome of death breaks down or not?
Well, we look at how actually tropical patterns can dictate or force the mid-latitude jet stream patterns. And as we look out here, as well as with computer model guidance helping us out, it's looking like this pattern is, for the most part, locked in place over the next couple weeks. You're going to see the ridge shift west and east a little bit here, but as far as its influence and grip over the Midwest, we just do not see that ending during the next 2 weeks, which takes us through the first week to 10 days of September.
Temperatures during the daytime, 80s and 90s, well advertised. I'm more interested right now, what are the nighttime temperatures going to be?
Well, nighttime temperatures primarily in the 70s, which again is pretty unusual for this time of year. Mm-hmm. Once you get into late August, your normal highs primarily mid-60s to mid-70s south, but your 70s, even low 80s in areas of the belt.
What else are you keeping an eye on?
Well, overseas, we continue to see some issues with the China corn and soybean crop. The North China Plain has been hurt by heat over the past month or so, getting a little bit of relief right now, but it looks like a warmer weather returns as well as a lack of precip here coming up. So certainly a Chinese crop here is something to keep an eye on as we wrap up the growing season.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
That's Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. If you are at the Farm Progress Show this week, be sure to drop by the University of Illinois tent to watch Todd Gleason and a bevy of our analysts broadcast the Closing Market Report. That's at 2 p.m. at the University of Illinois tent, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. This is Dave Dickey.